Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haberstroh.
And this is Mina Kimes, ESPN's Mina Kimes, senior writer at ESPN The Magazine, NFL Insider, many, many things. This is long overdue. Mina lives like right over there in Los Feliz and is a Top Chef fanatic, has seen every season. Mina, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be on this podcast. I love this podcast.
I'm so excited to have you on this podcast. We have a lot to talk about. This was a particularly, I feel like there are different kinds of good Top Chef episodes. There's the ones with interpersonal just tension and atmosphere. This one was like by and large, like, nobody was fighting in the kitchen over space. Nobody was like hiding supplies from anybody else. It was just a good old fashioned late in the season, everybody cooking on their game. And it was really tense.
Kevin, this was the Cleveland Cavaliers meeting the Warriors last year in the playoffs, where they're both on a win streak. And they were just like, everyone was excited about the collection of talent. Everyone was hitting a great high note, pun intended. And they performed really well. And it was one of those elimination challenges, not to put the horse before the carriage, if I use that analogy correct. But
I think you did.
It was really hard to watch people who were probably deserving of winning any other elimination challenge be voted out.
That's what I love about this season, because I agree with your Warriors-Cavs analogy, but there really is no Warriors of contestants. Right. There's so much parity in the final five, and I love that.
Like, yeah.
I had no idea who was going to win. And that's exciting and fun.
And you had no idea who was going to lose, because the person you thought was going to lose actually didn't lose. And it was, and I was feeling the same way. It was like, wow, Mina called it pretty early on in the episode. Wow, Carrie's going home.
Where do we want to start? I feel like we need to kind of reintroduce the Last Chance Kitchen winner. The fact that we were sold on this as being the final four, and actually is a final five.
Yeah, so...
spoiler alert, we've been told... somebody on Twitter got really angry that, like, we're not giving spoiler alerts. What kind of... Are you listening to this before you watch the episode?
Dude, he was upset about the title of the podcast, which was Return of the Risotto Curse.
Okay.
That doesn't reveal anything.
It actually did reveal for me. I had that experience.
What are you talking?
Yeah, I saw
it. Mina! So it didn't say who was getting voted off.
I know, but I saw the title. title of the podcast before I watched the show because it was on delay or whatever. And so when I was watching it, I was waiting for a...
Right. So in other words, you saw the title, you didn't listen to it, and then you went and watched. And you knew that the person who would be cooking risotto would be out.
I wasn't angry because I think being angry about spoilers in 2018 is kind of lame. Okay. But it did happen to me.
So Joe Flam's back, which is good for me, Tom, because... if we're listeners who are just kind of tuning in for the first time, we drafted fantasy teams.
Yep.
And while I had a very strong early season lead, I lost 7 weeks. I lost my 7 remaining contestants in successive weeks to the point where I started this week with 0 contestants. All my players were gone.
Yeah, and through those double doors from the old country western tavern,
the saloon.
Joe Flam, you kind of see his thighs. Like, it was like, those are Flam thighs, not very large thighs. Mm. And he came through, and I was upset because, you know what? You might have the top chef.
I don't know. Joe Flam is back. Joe Flam is back. That's all that matters. I have representation on the show.
Yeah, congratulations. You're still getting your ass beat, though.
On the show.
Have you guys thought about introducing a season-to-season tanking component where your lack of success could pay off next season, perhaps?
Right. So wait. Wait, this is a good question. Does the loser get the top pick next year?
No.
Well, how... You're right, because I don't even believe in drafts, right? I want to abolish the NBA draft. I'm the guy who wants to be abolishing the NBA draft labor rights.
Mina, since you're here, let me run through the draft that we did.
Okay.
So you've been watching every Top Chef since season one.
Yes.
When you're watching the first episode and you have to do a draft after the first episode, how much do you weigh what you saw in the first episode versus the bio coming in and like what you know about the chef?
Interesting. Much more bio and what you know about the chef and the edit. Do they get a lot of FaceTime? How are they presented?
So FaceTime is good.
Things. Yeah, FaceTime is good, I think. Right. The kind of FaceTime. I mean, we watch the show. We know. You can kind of tell who's going to be competitive early on.
So Tyler was my number one pick. I had the number one pick.
I totally was with you on Tyler. Yeah. I was shocked. Shocked.
I had Fatima, which yes. I know you're
love her.
Another fan. And then who was I had?
Your number one pick was two, David Fu.
I was too. I was all into it. Sort of, here's what I thought.
He had a great
if
dish.
If you have a pop-up restaurant,
yeah.
You're good at like quick. Like pop-up restaurants, by very definitions, are kind of Top Chef. I mean, it's a restaurant war. It's a quick fire. It is a Top Chef challenge, right? I mean, a pop-up chef.
And as you said, he won the quick fire on the first episode, right? With the corn salad,
incredible,
right?
That corn salad. I would say one thing I've noticed this season is there's not a lot of Asian flavors compared to some prior seasons.
We talked about that. And I'm kind of that's where I live.
Yeah.
We're going to Shibumi after this.
Yes.
We're going to Shibumi.
I've never been.
I'm so excited to take you. But let's come back to the show because, I mean, this is a great episode. So he comes back. Let's just run through the quickfire really quick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of interesting. They drafted ingredients. Everyone got a protein and then everyone got like some other stuff. And then Joe Flam walks in the door and they entitle him to take something from everything. He's the expansion draft. He just gets to take something from all, but no one gets to protect him.
See, isn't that an advantage, though?
It's like, a huge advantage. So for fucking up a couple weeks ago, he gets to get all the good shit. But, and here's the twist, the quickfire proved one of my theories, which is deprivation is a winner. The more constraints chefs have, the better they do. This is a Gail Simmons theory. It is a Kevin Arnovitz theory. So he takes the pork. So basically all the chefs each have a protein, either a ribeye or a pork or a fish or a chicken. Joe comes in and says, I will take the pork from Carrie, leaving her with honey, lemons, and onions. So
I'm going to pause you there.
Pause you there.
Mina, if you were Joe Flam walking through those double doors,
Mina Kimes is not walking through those doors.
Mina Kimes walking through those doors like it's Westworld, whatever it is. You're in the saloon.
I love it too. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. They said it was April.
Are we
amazing.
All Westworld fans?
Yes.
Look, we're the three.
So pack your knives, show. Westworld edition. Okay, so.
I would love that.
So he walks in and he gets the steal from everyone's palate, right? Do you steal for yourself or are you taking away things that you know is their powerhouse? Because when he stole the carrot from Joe Sasto, that was to me him being like, fuck you, you're not going to do any carrots here because I know that's your favorite thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to steal that. Not because I want to cook with carrots. I just want to eliminate your forte.
I think you play to your strengths. You draft the best player available for you. I was surprised. I didn't quite understand, you know, Carrie worked with Bread and she made her Fancy Toast part
another 20. Toast?
I didn't think that Bread was a staple that they had access to.
Interesting.
It's like this extra pantry, right?
Yeah, and usually like when there's a deprivation challenge, you get herbs, you get flour. I was surprised when she broke out the bread. I couldn't help but wonder if that was worked in given the restrictions she had to work with.
Right. It's like there's a when you do the D-League expansion draft, right. You just have like an access to a bunch of rotation players that you can pick anything. She picked Bread with the top of the French onion soup, which...
Which solicited the comment, I think, from one of the Joes, like, she's going to win with another fucking tartine.
Sasso.
Yeah. And, well, likely like, suspect on that comment.
So Carrie does shit on Bread and wins the whole time. I mean, let's just get to... Because we want to get to the elimination challenge. Basically, it does the top of the onion soup. I mean, you got to give her credit. First of all, I mean, for as much shit as she's taken for the toast, like, she didn't really have much of a choice. I mean, she was deprived of a protein... Goes with the top of the French onion soup, kind of that gooey, lovely, oniony, cheesy, and then kind of melts it on a toast. And
she is a quickfire powerhouse.
She beats Adrian's sarsaparilla chicken with tomato compote. She beats Chris's potato crusted chicken fried steak. Joe Sasso gets a lot of high marks for his halibut crudo with sarsaparilla. So, by the way, the challenge is you have to incorporate sarsaparilla. The contestants who incorporated it well and highlighted it were praised. Those who didn't were panned. He beats Joe's pork porterhouse with pickled carrots, all the ingredients that he stole and cabbage from other people. He dried out his pork porterhouse. And then there was one other contestant, I forget.
Adrian?
No, I talk about Adrian's contestant. Anyway, point is that she wins for essentially for Fancy Toast.
Yeah, and there's Mina was talking about it before we watched the episode. It's just like Joe has a way of being patronizing Sasto in a sense of like praising Carrie for how good she is, but in a way like a backhanded compliment.
Well, I was saying I liked her and I was rooting for. I like them all, which is unusual.
Yeah,
for this season, I find them all pretty likable. But I was saying the reason I was rooting for Carrie was that she was presented from the beginning as sort of the mom.
Yeah.
Like a mom. And typically on this show, moms run catering companies or they work at smaller restaurants. And they're certainly not James Beard award-winning chefs and they're kind of patronized. So the fact that she's kind of been surprising everyone and crushing them, and I didn't mean Sasto in particular patronized, I think everybody kind of does historically on the show, has been quite delightful to me. I mean, I've enjoyed the fact that she's been this dark horse candidate. Do I think she's going to win? Probably not. But I like her. I'm rooting for her.
Yeah, I like Carrie too.
And she's right now at the top of the leaderboard on the point system that we have.
Really?
Yeah.
She is.
Not as a spoiler for what happened in the Elimination Challenge, but she and Joe Sasto are juggernauts this season.
Well, she wins a lot of quickfires, right? How many quickfires she
won? Oh, she's won a whole bunch. I don't have access to your Wi-Fi, Kevin. We're not at that point in our friendship yet, I guess.
I can give you the password. I can't give it to you
don't
on air.
Don't do it on air.
I'm just saying. I don't have it on my laptop. Maybe on my phone,
but
not on
my laptop. Echo Park and just wants to mooch, like, okay, driving up here. Parking on the hill.
I could probably pull it up, but
why
I don't
you ask me. You didn't ask me for my.
I'm. You know what? Like it's bashful? On my phone, and the phone is the mic now. So I'm sorry. I'm just.
You know, I hate asking people for the Wi-Fi password when I come to their house because I feel like it's like I'm gonna be on my phone.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like such a weird passive aggressive move.
It's like, hey, do you have a Febreze in your bathroom?
No, what do I have? I have a little. You know, I have those sticks. Someone
it's like
gave
I'm walking
me.
In and
the
out
diffusers. I have those diffuser sticks. Someone gave me that as a housewarming gift. I don't know if they're working. Can I ask you a question, guys? How is it we're in Colorado and they've not done any marijuana theme?
Yeah.
How do you not feed like a nation? Like, you know, we've gathered 11 stoners for after, a Lebowski.
And they did a Hangover episode. So it's not like they're afraid of that.
It's legal.
It's Bravo, too. It's not like.
How do you not do a pot like baking challenge, quickfire? It's probably like Bravo's very countercultural. It's very gay. It's very.
Yeah.
It's kind of. It's. Lascivious.
Joe Sasto made a joke about smoking a lot of weed at some point.
And Chris can't drink alcohol, and they're making him do that on the episode. So, I
just cannot believe they didn't do any marijuana brownie challenges. First of all, that would have been like a huge, like, I mean, they, I just, or some sort of baking challenge with that, or incorporate weed into a dish. How do you not, how do you leave, Bravo, how do you leave money on the table there? That's a great episode. People love that. It's a great way to kind of get into a new audience.
Which of the chef or the judges do you think smokes the most weed?
I bet Padma's a
100%.
Padma, 100%. Totally. Yeah. Good. See?
I don't think Gale has even touched this stuff.
Really? I think they've all, I mean, you know.
They're
like,
chefs. Let me think. Yeah.
She's.
Chefs.
I just feel like she's, I mean, she was an angel. She literally looked like an angel in this episode with the white, beautiful, the gown, and then the
feathers.
The, yeah, it was just like.
In my experience, the chef community smokes to the edge of death.
Mm.
That is just my personal experience. All right. Speaking of baked, something must be baked in the challenge. They basically, the elimination challenge, they gondola these people up to 13,000 feet above sea level. Am I correct on that? Fact check.
12,000, 13,000.
And basically they basically get free reign to do pretty much what they want. There just must be a baked element. Why? Because baking at altitude is the ultimate chemistry brain mind bender. So it is much harder to bake because of altitude.
This is like a pitcher in the NFL. It's like going in a Lambo in January.
Oh, by the way, when they go to Denver, is there any of that altitude stuff with Denver?
Mostly for kickers, it gets talked about a lot. You know, a little bit less so for quarterbacks, but it comes into play.
And we've both discussed it at length. Like yes. Playing George Karl's like run and gun Denver stuff.
And even this year, the Denver Nuggets home record, they're like the 96 Bulls at home.
Really?
And yeah. Then on the road, they're like the 2008 Bobcats.
Yeah, this funny thing happens with the Nuggets. Where, first of all, it's kind of a confluence of events. For whatever reason, just the travel works out, a lot of teams finish a road stand or a West Coast swing, like with a back-to-back and like Denver being the second, like LA to Denver, where they lose an hour and they're dealing with the altitude.
Yeah.
Well, you and I both, which coach did we talk to? Someone said like they were actually going to fly into Denver day of, or Doc Rivers, I think I'd spoken to once. Yeah. It's like if we could do it, if it won't get fined, we would just, that playing in Denver, the altitude is so challenging. Playing basketball if you've been at sea level.
And by league rule, you're not allowed to fly in day of games in case there is a mishap and you don't make the game.
Right, huh. Exactly. So Denver, Colorado presents real competitive challenges in athletics and in cooking. All right, so that's the thing. And so, like, this was a really fun challenge.
Can we talk about Aussie Men in Black guy?
Oh, yeah, please.
Oh, my God. Will you regale
us on this?
Since you can't see at home, Kevin takes copious notes that are like, hey, listeners should know this, how detailed, he's passing me my wine, the just quality, the fact-checking, all of my jokes, or my notes are jokes about Paulie Brandt. Hold on.
I have nothing.
Or just
drum roll, please.
I'm not making fun of him. I love him. To be clear. Also,
we need more of him.
I've been to his restaurants. I was like, why is it so familiar? And I remembered.
Tell us about this, because
so,
I haven't.
I might be saying this wrong, but Cortone in New York.
Okay.
I think it's closed. I used to live in New York City. And then he opened the Elm, which was in Williamsburg, in the hotel, like three blocks from where I used to live in New York. He's tremendous. He's an international chef. I mean, just restaurants all over the world. I had never seen or, more importantly, heard from him, and I never want to hear from anyone else for the rest of my life.
Yes.
I want to pay him, commission a voicemail recording from Paul Lieber. Like, I love, it's like that kind of last voice you hear before you die. Just so creepy. I was so enchanted by the image of him and Wiley Dufresne sitting next to each other.
Yes.
They're kind of like weird, like,
it was like, what show are we watching here? Is this a cooking show? Is this a Project Runway show? Like, what show are we watching? It was like a mix of Men in Black and Elton
and
John.
Like a dash of the 92nd Street Y.
Yeah.
Yes, like, right, who right, are like, these people? They look like brothers who don't talk to each other. Right? Because they live very different lives. Like, that was kind of the vibe.
But they have enough thread of, like, you kind of look alike. Like
you've
got
same hair, kind of. I love him. Paul Liebrand, if you listen to the podcast, I know you do. Hit me up. I need that voicemail. I was enchanted. So what did you think about when he came in? So they had the opportunity to test the baking.
Right.
What did you think about that whole
It was so funny because I felt like they had a very like, shut up, mom, I get it. Like, I know I have to leave it in extra long. Like, it was like every time they made a suggestion, the smirks on the chef's like, yep, I understand. That's why I'm going to do this and then do that. And they kept reiterating the same instruction. Like, are you sure you're going to do that?
But it did introduce one of the interesting subplots. So Carrie was all giddy about the idea of doing a beef Wellington, and which requires just a great deal of finesse to make that dough. Mm. And she ultimately concluded after kind of the walkthrough that, you know what, why am I even going to try to fuck with this? Why am I going to make Wally Dufresne like beef Wellington? Who needs that aggravation? And
I thought that was going to be the kiss of death.
She's exactly what I thought. Like, in fact, the edit was sort of like, oh, she's going to do the Weep Wallington and she's going to fuck it up and she's going to go home.
Sneaky.
However, the twist was is she decided, no, I'm not going to do Weep Wallington. I should have my head examined. She's going to play it safe, do a little cornbread, which you kind of gather. And again, I have not baked in my life. Like, I cook, but I do not bake. That cornbread is sort of in terms of degree of difficulty, a slightly easier thing to do than, say, the profiteroles that Joe Sasto was going to do. And
well, if you get a dry cornbread, it is not good. Like, if you go to Boston Market when you're stoned and it's like the dry cornbread, and you're like chewing on it for like 6 hours, and you're like, this used to be so good. Why is it off?
I'm a Southerner. I'm not a huge cornbread fan.
Whoa.
Whoa, have you had like a really good
cornbread? I've had really good cornbread. I think really good cornbread, there's a ceiling.
Butter on it? Like,
no, there's just a ceiling. Like, really good cornbread is still cornbread. It's still cornbread.
It's a vehicle, though. Like, I feel like cornbread is best dipped into gravy when you just put everything on it, and it's kind of... All
right, would you, when in earth would you ever have cornbread if you could have a biscuit?
Okay, that's all right. But a dinner roll is on the way.
Cornbread
by.
Is because someone was too lazy to make biscuits.
But it has that sweet corn
flavor. I love cornbread.
It goes nicely with the savory of a mashed potato.
I know. There's good cornbread out there. I'm sorry. There's good cornbread out there. I don't, we have to make it a little bacon grease. See, I don't want my cornbread too sweet. I want bacon grease.
Oh, no, man. If I get my fried chicken and I just want something a little sweet to finish it off, give me some cornbread. Yeah.
So we had two cornbread contestants. We had Chris, who did a
shocking
crispy black pepper quail, corn pudding, some butternut squash element, and then maple bacon cornbread. And then Carrie ultimately goes against that Beef Wellington and does the Wagyu ribeye, spring vegetables, and cornbread. Kind of separate components, a really pretty plate, pretty safe, but, stuff that she can execute. We have Joe Sasto, who's like, who kind of throws some shade at the safe, sort of... those who took safety goes with the savory profiteroles with foie kombucha cherry jam. Go, Joe Sasto. Love that you did that. And he's going to do a roasted duck with I think spring peas, and that was him. Joe Flam's going with braised pork with biscuits and a pea puree, kind of a goat cheese biscuit that ends up being more of a crumble. And then Adrian, bless her heart. Can I talk about Adrian again?
Yeah.
I love earnest people.
Here's 6 minutes.
I love earnest people, and I love that Adrienne has an arc. I love that she couldn't season for shit at the beginning of the season. She has her little journal. She makes notes. She improves. She works on her game, like in the summer with Tim Gergerich or some shit.
Who is she in the NBA? Who's Adrienne?
She's the big fundamental.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodles is like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with the plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
We already said that.
No, because she said she wasn't like a number one draft. She's like someone who worked on her game.
I mean, is it Shane?
She's like she's the no stat all star. She's the no stat all star. Yeah. Although is he a great technical player?
I mean, he's got he's got pretty much the actual game down. It's just he's never going to be able to dunk.
I'm trying to think. I mean, because she has some wonderful technique. Like she is there's a lot of it's got to be someone like a really good footwork.
Steve Nash?
No, because Nash is more of a guerrilla warrior. Like he's just going in there and probing. Like she is refined.
I thought her dish looked delicious, by the way. So, and the only one I thought that really integrated the bake component. Because everything else, it felt kind of random, like
just Flam. A sidecar.
Flam's was ridiculous, by the way. Can we talk about, he literally just sprinkled bread on it, and which is a thing I do.
It was more a crumble than a biscuit.
Yes, I mean, it was just so random. And I felt like she actually, I think she drew the most praise.
So she did a butter poached lobster tail. She did kind of a mountain. She called it mountain dough or mountain bread. It was essentially a challah hybrid. Did vinegar pearls, and then kind of did the kind of champagne caviar with the lobster.
I thought she nailed that dish. Visually, and it looked like so. It wasn't just something that looked beautiful for Instagram. It actually looked like it was delicious.
Right. So I think one of the themes here is, and this happens, I think, late in a lot of seasons, which is that there becomes the technical chefs and the earthy rustic. Self-made kind of homey chefs.
Yes.
They kind of go in different directions. And we basically are at a point now where we have two really pure technical chefs in Joe Sasto and Adrian. We have two homey chefs in Carrie and in Chef Chris.
Yeah.
Flam is sort of interesting. He clearly has technique. Doesn't always – it's not the leg of the stool he really rests on though, right? Like, I mean,
it's interesting.
He's a Chicago Italian restaurant chef.
He had pork on the quickfire, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he went with pork again on I was surprised by that. I thought that, if you didn't go well with the pork initially.
But one was a braise. I mean, I think a braise and sort of
is
a different story. But so it was interesting because ultimately the dishes came out and the three on the top were the two technical chefs plus Joe Flam, who is a technical chef. I mean, right. And then on the bottom were the homie chefs who did great plate favor profiles and they were well executed. But the complaint was that they just weren't either well integrated as Gail Simmons, my spirit animal, said, the more delicate pieces got lost on Chris's dish. And it's just those technical things that separate the wheat from the chaff in this part of the season.
I would have thought the technical chefs sort of prevailed because of the nature of the challenge and being somewhat scientific, but I don't. That's not why they actually prevailed. I think in this case, it wasn't that the bottom two didn't execute. Both of their bread, I think, was fine.
Do we think that the fact that they both did cornbread was sort of frowned upon?
I think it was more the integration and the fact that they didn't have creative restaurant-y dishes.
And when they were in the bottom two, I think collectively there was a consensus in the room that Carrie was going home.
Sure seemed like it.
I was certain. I mean, Mina called it early, and I totally got it. And then the edit suggested it, too.
Yeah.
But Tom. Dun, dun, dun. Tom, they totally pulled the rug out.
So I think he saved her, by the way, because I don't know if you noticed during the judging, he was defending her the most. One thing I've noticed over my many
who
seasons,
was submitting
her? Tom. He was. If you go back and look, he was like, "I love this dish." He had no criticisms for it.
For Chris's dish,
Carrie.
Carrie's dish. Okay.
And one thing I've known from watching this show a lot is if Tom rides hard for a chef, he/she is not going home.
Mm. You know, we should look at that. We should ask Lynn about.
Oh, Lynn. Lynn. Have you know Lynn? You been to TopChefStats.com?
No.
Okay.
Oh, Mina.
Lynn has this website called TopChefStats.com, and it is the baseball football Lynn, reference.
Lynn is in Phoenix.
Look at this.
Oh.
Wow.
She charts who says, "I'm not here to make friends."
Look at this. She even has the codes. I'm sorry. Right now, if listeners who are like, what the hell are they doing?
We're looking at Liz's
Top Chef,
it's
not blank.
It's fantastic.
It's again, we're gonna pimp this every single episode.
It's so great.
TopChefStats.com.
So I think what Mina is suggesting Lynn, is a Tom Colicchio bias. Is like if Colicchio rides hard for someone, they're getting pushed through.
I think he has the most influence and power.
He also, you know, it's funny. He will throw this, I don't know if it's faux populism, but like, a little too chefy, he'll say at times. Like, yeah. He didn't care. Like, some of the other chefs didn't feel like, yeah, that basically, Carrie put three well-executed components on a plate that have no relational.
But don't fuck up a nacho.
Right. But whereas he was like, hey, they were all well-executed. I don't care. I'm happy to eat the cornbread on the side. You know, like, he doesn't care that they're not integrated.
He didn't like Adrian's dish.
Yeah, he thought it was boring.
Yeah.
He thought it was boring.
And I thought Adrian's dish was going to be like the big, big winner.
I feel like a protector for Adrian. Adrian reminds me when I was a young, not yet aware that I was gay, like she reminds me of every crush I had on a girl like in high school. Like the crush that I didn't realize was not sexual in interest, but just like sort of
earnest, a little unfriendly looking.
Exactly. These are all the girls I had crushes on before I realized I was gay. Exactly. Those were all my crushes. Adrian is the manifestation of every gay crush I had. Kind of the way Gail Simmons is in my adult gay crush, even though I'm fully aware of what I am.
She and Tom both have very big gay followings, I've heard.
Tom Colicchio?
Yeah. Did you not know that?
He has a big gay following?
Yeah.
Who produced these people? What are you talking about?
Cite them. People I have known, met, and been friends with in my life, they love him.
So the gay men you know, like, yes, love Tom Colicchio? Is it like the virile bald thing?
He's like a light bear. Not like a full bear, but if you're kind
he's
of
a
like...
cub? No, it comes from like young bears.
I know. I think cub is actually a technical term.
I grew up in the 90s, you know, as a young gay man. I know all these terms. But like, that's interesting. Like, I just don't think of Tom as sort of like gay catnip or anything. I mean, he's just
get
not.
Get at us, y'all, listeners.
Seriously, yes. All the large constituency of gay male listeners who are really into Tom Colicchio, just let us know.
I actually thought he might have been gay in the first like two
Colicchio?
Episodes. Yeah. Nah. I don't know. I just had a
first
or second season. But
dude, you went to Wake Forest. What the fuck do you know about Gator and stuff?
Sure. That's a fair criticism.
He throws off a vibe.
I get the full constellation of gay attraction. Anyway, let's move on.
Two of my closest friends at Wake Forest are gay. Kevin. And in fact, I almost put you together with one like 7 years ago.
Which one?
Lee Tucker.
Did I ever meet him?
Yeah. Lee's very much open.
I'm very
gay,
happily attached.
Yeah, I know. I was just saying in like 2010 when we...
Oh, I was a disaster. You'd never... why would you ever set a good friend of yours up with me? Like that would have been...
Chris did this thing. Chris...
Tom Colicchio, a big gay icon to ride on a bear float in the LA Pride Parade, says Eater.
There you go.
Dated, what dated when? July 2010. July 12th. This is only a few days after the decision.
A bear float.
This is a week after the decision.
Yeah, yeah.
A bear float. He's not really he's bear adjacent, you're right. So, all right, where were we?
Chris said at one point when he was at, right before he got eliminated, he said, this might have been the best dish I've put out all season long. Mm-hmm. And you know when they do this in the editing where you don't see him on camera saying it, but they dub it over as they're like
ADR.
Cutting to a different scene?
Ooh. ADR.
What does that stand for?
Audio dialogue replacement.
Audio dialogue replacement. I felt like that was an audio dialogue replacement.
I think I have that acronym right. The film
He said, this might have been the best dish I put out all season long. And I was like, really? I didn't think he felt that strong about that dish.
I mean,
maybe he did.
Chris goes home, and which, by the way, I mean, let's just kind of let's do our obit for Chris, who I'm so really fond of.
Love him.
I don't know that he's always self-aware in the kitchen of, like, I mean, I think the ravioli last week was sort of a harbinger of things to come, but he's a wonderful chef, a wonderful voice. I love his story. Rejected, what, 4 times from the show?
Yeah.
I'm going to miss him, and I bet his food is so freaking good.
It just looks delicious.
It
looks earthy. I mean, it doesn't look like Joe Sasto's food, though,
We're in the chefy phase of the season we've moved to chef land.
I mean, there have been chefs in the past who are more down-to-earth.
Isaac
got top three, right?
Yeah.
Top
three, as I recall.
Yeah.
I mean, who is the...
Amar.
I feel like earthy is like a euphemism, but at least chefy chef who's won top chef.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is the least chef? Who's the least chefy chef who's won?
Who's won?
I have the list of chefs who have won open.
Who's the least chefy chef? What's his name? The upset from season 5.
Hosea?
Yeah. Ugh. No, he was chefy. Was he chefy?
The worst.
Oh my goodness!
Everybody thinks that.
I know he is the least talented chef to have won Top Chef.
I'm looking at this list and it's pretty chefy.
It's really chefy.
It's super chefy.
It gets chefy. We're the chefy. Does that mean Carrie's next?
Oh, you mean she's due?
I guess she due to be bumped.
I don't know, but I think right now...
Let's handicap. What's going on? All right, okay. So we have 4 chefs left. I mean,
here are the point totals that I have so far. Joe Sasto is at 86 points. Uh-huh. Carrie at 84.
Uh-huh.
Chris is out. He was at 45. He was in third place. Then you have Bruce at 35. He's out. So the only people that are remaining are Adrian.
And how many points
Joe Flam is at... 31.
And so what is Adrian at?
Adrian's at 23 and Joe Flam's at 31.
So is that a predictor? Do we think that if one was saying, hey, if you wanted the best predictor, who's going to win at this point, you just go with the high point?
I mean, it's a good question for Mina. If you were to pick 2 chefs, would you pick it from the Carrie Joe's Sasto group to win it? Or would you pick from the lower tier of Joe Flam and
Adrian? Well, Joe Flam's kind of an asterisk, right? Because like he was ineligible to win points for
he didn't do well.
It's so random once you get to the top three. I mean, I think there's such a high degree. Unless you're in a Paul Kui season where it's very obvious that, you know, Golden State is going to take it all. It's pretty random at the end.
It is. I just wonder, like, so, is it going to be, so if you're somewhere, here are various theories. It's the chefiest. If you think the final two are going to be the chefiest,
Stash.
It's going to be Stash versus Adrian. If you think it's going to be top point winners, that past success is predictive of future success, it's going to be Carrie and Joe Sasto. I mean, basically, we're saying Joe Sasto is which basically suggests to me that Joe Sasto is in the finals.
I think Joe Sasto is going to win it all because so I think Carrie is a juggernaut when it comes to quick fires, and she's got the creativity down where she comes out with a dish where
don't
you're
they
like
stop quick fires at a certain point, don't we? Like in the last final,
which is why I think Sasto, when he's given like a couple days to prepare a dish and conceive, he's going to come up with something that's going
to
blow your face.
Right, because we're not getting to the point where it's like 48 hours, the sky is the limit. Just go do your thing. And I think given the mostly, she's great in deprivation situations. In fact, you give her too broad of a canvas and Joe can just fill that vacuum with all kinds of creativity. I'm very curious to see what Adrian's going to go out on a wonderful dish. I'm going to predict that right now.
Yeah. What do you guys feel about it? Was there a moment in that episode where you thought, oh, they're not going to send anyone home? Like it's too, these dishes are too good.
If they hadn't brought back Quick Fire or the Last Chance Kitchen winner that episode, I would have thought that was possible because it did feel like they were setting that up, but I knew they would get rid of someone.
No, there's always pretty present. It's what I call when Padma goes, please pack your knives and go. She sounds apologetic about the sad please pack your knives and go, not the get the fuck out of here.
Ooh, please,
but the like knives. Yes, please pack your knives and go. It's so terrible.
Like, when she dropped Chris, I was like, what?
Yeah,
should have seen it coming.
What else?
Yo, wait, Mina, before you go, your favorite season.
Oh my God. Okay, like wait, I have them all in front of me. So.
Let's do your unified theories of Top Chef. I mean, let's talk Top Chef. We kind of just threw you into the episode. Let's back up.
Why do you love Top Chef? Have you watched Chopped before and gotten into that? Project Runway or Bachelor?
Are you a dork on Bachelor? I mean, this has been said many times by many people, but Top Chef is obviously the preeminent reality competition show because it actually draws the best competitors in America. And it does feel like the most merit-based. It's more merit-based.
Because as good of a person as he is, he's even a better chef.
Nice.
No, I mean, just the I don't watch it to learn. By the way, I've never watched Top Chef before tonight on an empty stomach, and everything looked fucking
good. No, it was really good.
I kept saying, I was like, that looks great.
You know, I have a friend who says
I need the fuck out of that.
You know what's funny? I have a friend who says that Top Chef is fundamentally not a good show because, no, and this is the theory, and I understand it, is he's like, you know, unlike Project One Way, where you can actually see the thing. You can't say, like, we're all sitting here saying, oh, that dish should have won. How the fuck do we know? That's
argument. What's great about it, because no matter how refined your palate is, no matter how many restaurants you've been to, no matter where you can cook, I can't cook, it forces you to use your imagination to think, what does blueberry and shishito peppers taste like together? Yeah. And you do this thing in your mind, and then the judges either reinforce it or challenge it, and it's kind of like this active watching experience that's wonderful. I mean, it engages you, I think, in a way that other shows don't.
And there's a certain trustworthiness with the judges, right?
So credible, yes.
Like, you trust that Padma just nailed the description on that dish.
Right, I mean, they're classically trained. I mean, Gail Simmons is an absolute titan in the food writing community. Like, I mean, it is as you say, I mean, there's a lot of merit on this show at work.
Yes. All right, favorite seasons. So Kristen Kish is my favorite all the time.
Mine too. I already did the Kristen Kish, I think, love letter.
Was that the season with Heather? There was like some serious villains on that season, as I recall. Whoever came in
third. I just know Kristen was voted off and came back through the consolation bracket and just blew faces off.
It was her versus Brooke, her friend, and there was this whole thing. Yeah. And I mean, she just is like iconic as a human being who I want to be friends with, maybe like wear her skin like a skin suit.
I mean, look at that. Win. Got screwed out of restaurant wars.
She was thrown under the bus.
Boom, thrown under the bus.
Remember that? Maybe by Heather and some villainous.
And like, thank you, excuse me, but I'll take the season. Thank you.
So great.
Look at that chart. Brooke was second.
Brooke was just.
Sheldon was a good show. That was a great. That's my favorite season. That's my favorite season. That is my answer to favorite season. I think early in the
loved.
Stefan. Josie was kind of a villain.
Yes. That was. Who threw her? Did Josie throw her into the bus?
Yeah, I think Josie threw her.
Yeah, you're saying that. Josie
had like six lows.
Ugh. Yeah. Terrible. I loved Hung's victory because the show was new, and based on my understanding of reality,
season three.
It was after Iman. I didn't think someone like him would win because the way they edited him, he was not charismatic. You know, I mean, it was just like it sort of redefined my idea of what a reality show could be because. I thought somebody that who is kind of, I guess, edited as this irritant in some ways, who is technically like so skilled, would not win a TV show like Top Chef, and then he won, and it was awesome.
I believe he is like Adrian right now, where he didn't win much at all. Coming into the final three, he basically didn't win. If I remember correctly, he was like very much a late bloomer on the show.
Yeah. Mm. He opened. I didn't realize he was Ketch, an NBA. Favorite.
He runs Catch. Big celebrity hotspot here.
I am a big NBA hotspot. Big National Basketball Association, both in Los Angeles or West Hollywood and New York.
Very successful.
Yeah. If you're a judge on Top Chef, do you take in consideration what they've done previously on the show?
Ooh.
So do you have a long memory or a short memory?
At what point in the season?
That's interesting.
Because I don't, in the finale, I think
your track record.
Yes, you got to wipe the slate clean because they're both good.
Okay.
I think this is why I was so shocked when Tyler was kicked off. Although it was so early, he hadn't built up that much of a record. But if you're like halfway through and somebody's been crushing it and some weird thing happens in the challenge and there's a misstep, I do think you take that.
Yeah, because Joe Flam won the previous episode and then got.
I mean, he was on top of the world. He was asserting himself as the chef to beat.
I got a little nervous, and it happened again. I don't know if this season it's been happening, and I'm just confirmation bias here, but they did a little bit of an introspective confessional with Chris to open the show, where he's like, I've been on Top Chef 5 times, and I feel really good about this, and I was like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Like,
see, I don't know trouble. Do we know if there's a rhyme or reason to the sort of, is the testimonial a somewhat of a tell?
It can go both ways, but... If you get kicked off, usually there is a testimonial, but often there's more than one, right? So you don't know which of the chefs who shared something about themselves. I think I have with Bruce.
Joe Sasto, Joe Flam, Adrian, Carey, who's winning it all?
Sasto.
Sasto.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for Flam because he's the one contestant I have left. But I think Sasto. It's just, we're at that point. We're in the Sasto time of the season.
Yes. It's Sasto. It's Sash time, guys.
It's dishes, not plates. And he is a guy who can assemble with preparation
dishes
or wheel.
Dishes, not plates. Yeah.
We're here.
That's actually what our podcast
is. I know, I was going to say, that's a great podcast.
I like packing your ass. Oh, where are my t-shirts? I ordered some t-shirts. Order some t-shirts. Tom, promote the t-shirts.
bit.ly/PYK shirt. So bit.ly/PYK shirt. If you want a pack your knife shirt, go to bit.ly/PYK shirt.
I want one.
Mina, this is great. We have to have you back.
Yes.
This is fantastic. We have a reservation at Shibumi right now.
Yeah, let's go. Mina go do her NBA All-Star Weekend because you are an NBA analyst now.
Yeah, I dropped a lot of casual NBA references trying to fit in.
I know. And by the way, it was totally appreciated, and we do. We have our Venn diagram of like...
Who is the best NFL foodie?
Right, like who's like the Popovich Spurs and like J.J. Redick's of
it's
the...
It's not really a thing, like it is.
So like when they went to the Denver Broncos this season, it was like, ooh, I hope this guy's there.
Yeah.
Wasn't that. Like Von Miller is not a foodie by any stretch.
No, actually Von Miller raises free-range chickens.
Okay.
So there you go.
Like I can buy a free range chicken. Who is that person?
Von.
The joke is I know nothing about the NFL.
He's Kevin Durant of.
Is he like really good?
Yeah, he's very good.
Oh,
yeah.
That's hilarious.
He's on the Broncos.
I'm gonna get fired from ESPN for not knowing who these people are.
It's amazing that you don't know.
I have no idea. I'm an NBA guy through and through.
Mina, thank you so much for joining. And you can find her work on ESPN.com and ESPN the magazine, but also and most importantly on TV on Around the Horn. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that was the most important. I was so excited.
Thanks, Mina. This is Pack Your Knives.